Welcome back to the Bruce Salen Show with Dad's Point of View. I'm Bruce Salen, and you can email me at bruce@brucesalen.com. You can follow me on Twitter, and you can like the Dad's Point of View page, and that would make me very happy. It's time for two segments with Dr. Jennifer Weberman, who is a psychologist and parent coach with a ton of experience. She looks 12, but she's got over a decade of experience, and she's about to become a mom. So we always begin our segment with Dr. Jennifer Weberman asking the health and welfare of her and the baby she is carrying. So welcome to the show, Dr. Weberman.
Thank you so much. And I hope I don't look 12, because with this big pregnant belly, that might creep a lot of people out.
Well, okay, maybe 16. But you are due, what, 4 weeks from now?
4 weeks. It's crazy. It's coming so fast.
So tell us how you're doing. How's the baby? And from what I understand,
you got to
go ahead. You go.
She's phenomenal. The doctor says she's doing really well. I can feel her getting stronger. I always talk every week about how hard the kicks are, but they get so much more pronounced, and I literally can see like the definition of her feet and certain body parts like elbows and knees coming through my belly.
Wow.
It's absolutely insane. It's the most amazing thing. And it's also really uncomfortable, and I don't think I've had a good night's sleep in a really long time.
Is Jason getting a kick out of it as well? I mean, he must be just marveling at the miracle of life.
He is already in love. I know sometimes for men it's a different process because they're not carrying the child, and so sometimes they feel like they become a father when they meet their baby as opposed to during the pregnancy. But he is so in love already. And every time she gets the hiccups or something, I always have him put his hands on the belly so he can feel it and experience it with me. And it's just been this incredible bonding experience.
That's so sweet. So you've decided that you don't have enough stress in your life, so you bought a new house? Is that what I understand?
We're in the process. We just won the bidding war on Wednesday. That was an interesting learning experience. And now we're doing the part where the attorneys are reviewing the contract. And then next is the inspection and then the closing. And it has just been such a whirlwind. We're trying to get all this done before she comes. And
You mean the legal stuff, but you're not going to move in 4 weeks, are you?
No, we probably won't be able to move until a few weeks after she comes. But still, it's going to be a lot for Jason because he's mostly going to be doing this.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, you're going to be nursing and taking care of a little baby. So a move is really should be on his shoulders. And my big piece of advice regarding this is hire whatever help you need. Don't try to take on the stress of a move, which is one of the high stressors, as you well know, along with all the new baby stuff, which I hope is not a stressor as much as happy stress, but it's still stress. So,
we've got three of the big ones at one time: moving, buying a new home, and having a new baby as far as life stress goes. We're trying to squeeze it all into 1 month.
Well, hopefully you'll get it out of the way for the next decade. let's talk about entitlement. And that's what I talked about the first two segments. And I know you must have not only a list, but other thoughts and some experience, of course, directly with your practice about entitled kids. So what are your thoughts on this general topic?
Yeah, I was thinking about it because this new generation has been, accused or referred to so many times as the entitled generation. And I really like to look at, as a psychologist, how we got there. What are the ingredients that makes up an entitled person or an entire generation of entitled people? And I really believe that it takes a combination of micro and macro influences to create this. And so when I look at the macro level, at the culture at large, we are sort of immersed in this culture of stuff. And we're sold this idea now, currently, that happiness looks a certain way. It's a cool phone, it's a cool car, cool clothing, a nice house, perfect hair, great body, all this stuff. And when don't have
take all that. Yes, please.
Yeah, because we're told that that's going to make us happy and fulfilled, or at least as good as other people. And if we don't have those things, we have this feeling of being deprived, like we're somehow not getting something that we should have. So So that's the culture at large that we're surrounded by and that we're raising children in. And then you look at the microculture. So in this particular situation, I'll refer to that as on a family level, what's going on in a home. So you add on top of that parents who might be feeding this by providing everything that their children want, shielding them from failure, from responsibility, from hardship, or all the things that are uncomfortable, bailing them out of trouble when it's their own doing. What you likely end up with that combination is a young adult, you know, a grown, a 20-something-year-old, who's a highly entitled individual. And I don't think this is the only generation that's been entitled, but I think that it's entitled in a unique way, and it's really creating some unique issues.
I think it's been a continuum that began in the 60s with the protest movement, the love generation, the hippie movement, all that stuff. It was the first time, and it began, and it was accelerated by Watergate, the Vietnam War, all that stuff. And now we have all these people that questioned authority in the 60s and 70s that are now the authority. They're now guiding our politics, our worldview, you know, from Obama on down. And most dangerously, in my opinion, on our college campuses, where free speech is pretty much stifled altogether. Can't believe what recently happened at Brandeis University, where they succumbed to Islamic pressure and took away a honorary doctorate to a really heroic woman who has fought the horrors that are begat upon Muslim women. This is just a travesty of political correctness and an embarrassment to Brandeis University. So we have a whole generation, of which I'm at the heart of it. I mean, as far as age, I don't think I contribute in the negative way, but a whole generation that has, you know, changed our society, our view of the world, and what we're entitled to. Not how I was raised.
Very different. And, you know, when I look at these giant problems, problems that seem so big that they're just bigger than I am, what I always ask myself is...
Well, that's not saying much. I mean, even pregnant, you're tiny.
I don't feel so tiny, but I'm glad to know you still think I'm tiny. But
anyway,
I just mean that what... Like, my question always to myself is... how do I want to be a contribution to this issue? And what I always come back to is ways to empower families, because that's what I feel like I can impact. And that's what I feel like on a day-to-day basis, the average Joe, that's where they can impact. You can impact your own family. You can't change other people's children. You can't change the way the political structure is, you know, easily. But what you can do is raise your children to be part of a solution instead of the problem. And I think that's where parents can feel empowered.
I agree. The hard part is when so many of their peers are being spoiled or allowed privileges or get away with things that your own kids don't. And you will face this, of course, later on when when you have a young child. I think it's a little easier. So I think this is I agree with you. You could only, you know, it's tikkun olam, repair the world one person at a time, which of course is a Jewish value that you and I know well, and at least do the best we can with our own family. And I think that's a great, great way to look at it, because if you look at the macro, it does become overwhelming. The world's problems, it can just make you impotent, so to speak. But there's a lot you can do in your own home. And certainly modeling behavior is the biggest thing that I think parents do. Self-reliance, hard work, all of that.
I agree. And we're going to talk about that in this segment and the next segment, because modeling is so important. And I think parents sometimes underestimate the influence they can have on that easy, simple day-to-day level. And when you're looking at how you're raising your own children, just being part of the solution and not the problem, just on a tiny level, your child has an iPhone and they lose it or break it. Do you replace it for them right away? Or do you have them work for it so that they can have a new phone? Most of the parents that I see don't have them do that. It's replaced right away. And the kids tell me, my dad made me wait 2 weeks to get a new phone. He's such a jerk, I can't believe it. And the expectation is, I don't have something that I want, And the fact that I don't have it and you're not meeting my need immediately means you're depriving me of something. It, they almost experience it as meanness. Whereas if the environment or the culture in the home was, you know, we work for things, there's accountability for the things we break and lose, then that child would have a different kind of expectation, or you would hope.
I understand. I understand. Now, in your practice, do you see the parents as more the problem than the kids, and that they're responding to what the parents have done to allow their behavior, or is it a little bit of both?
You know, I think that the wording that I would use was probably just a little bit different, but it kind of accomplishes the same thing. Rather than being focused on what is the cause of the problem, it's who's going to have the greatest influence to be part of the solution. And parents have such a strong influence to be part of the solution, even when they have children that they think are at the age where they've lost their influence, you know, the teenagers, you still have so much more influence than you can imagine. And so my work focuses on giving tools and strategies to the parents, but also to the children, so that they can navigate this world. This world is complicated. With all the technology and all the influences that they're surrounded by, it's a complicated world. And if you arm them with strategies and tools to deal with that and just a good sense of values, so that you're like the tree in the tornado that doesn't get uprooted, you can stay calm in the storm because you know who you are and you know it's important to you, and you're able to navigate that complexity because of that, that is the most empowering thing in the world.
I agree. I also really, really believe that parental consistency is really important. And the first few years of your children's lives are so important. You know, they often say a joke about the Catholic religion, which is, give me a kid for 5 years and I've got him for life, referring to a Catholic religious education. Well, I think the same thing really applies to just to general values. So anyway, we are out of time for this segment. So we're going to come back. We're going to take on bullying, which is going to be the Dad Chat topic with Billy Ray Cyrus tonight at Dad Chat. So stay tuned. Dad's point of view, that's right, B. Sal, he knows what's cool. He's now got his own radio show and a Twitter too. Hashtag Dadchick, check that bit out, fool. Instagram and Facebook, dude. Yo, B. Sal, he's one hit fool. Yo, happy Father's Day, Dad. I know you don't like rap, but hope you like this one. I mean, I think it's rad.